So there's competition for survival, mostly for water and food also. We could even go without bathing because you want to preserve that water to drink it tomorrow. I've went through orphanages together with my siblings. Sometimes you could find even, because Kibera is very congested, you'll find even most of the girls, like my sister, small or middle age, they are being raped. Or people are coming into your house, they steal everything because it's not a permanent house. It can be break from the other side and then they steal everything. And that's what our life, we used to go and steal things, we sell, and then we get money for the family.
Your living quarters, like what was that like?
It's just a small house where your mom lives, and then we didn't have even the beds. We could sleep down.
You slept on the floor?
Down on the floor.
Was it dirt like this?
Just like this.
How long did you live in a space like that?
I've lived in that space since I was young, up to when I was rescued here in MCF.
At what age were you rescued?
I was rescued when I was 13 years old.
How did that happen?
It still hits, I don't miss. I just go, 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 like a go, go flow. And I'm almost done, and I told y'all so. When I throw these flows, like it's Rochambeau. And I ain't too close, it's Joe Smoke Goes. And I'm on my grind, that is all the time. I do not do breaks, that's right, I stay in dry. And look, I'm back with a little bit of that. A little more cash than I came in with. Ready, that cat is not that bad. But I still ask the boy, got skills. I don't need her, I don't need him. I don't need help with me, I got this. I can sing songs, I can spit raps. And I can do both, even do this, word.
Before we dive into today's episode, I want to take a moment to personally thank the incredible sponsors who helped make it possible for us to film this episode in Kenya. Jonathan's Restaurant, Royal Bakery, Frozen Cow, The Pest Rangers, Elevation Wellness, Red's Barbershop, Axelrad, The Cadle Agency, and PA Inclusive. I also want to express my deepest gratitude to my family and friends, whether you supported this journey financially or just cheered me on every step of the way. Your support doesn't just keep the show going. It helps us bring these important stories to life and share them with the world. This episode is brought to you by Anthracite Pallet Solutions. Need reliable, durable pallets to keep your business moving? At Anthracite Pallet Solutions, we specialize in new and used 48x40 wooden pallets. Whether you're shipping, storing, or stacking, we offer high-quality pallets that keep your operations running smoothly. With our own fleet of trucks and trailers, we deliver on time, every time. And if warehouse space is a concern, our drop trailer services have you covered. From custom orders to large-scale deliveries, we're here to meet your every need with top-notch customer service and unbeatable prices. We're currently shipping within 2 hours of Scranton, Pennsylvania, including Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and Maryland. Call us today at 570-606-9206 or inquire online at anthracitepallet.com and let us handle your pallet solutions. Anthracite Pallet Solutions, built to last. Designed to move. This episode is brought to you by the Pest Rangers. Finding insects in your home can be a real pest. I know I felt that way when I discovered termites living rent-free in my house. But thanks to the team at the Pest Rangers, I'm no longer bugging out over this issue. So if any creepy crawlers are cramping your style, there's no if-ands or bugs about it. You gotta call the Pest Rangers. For more information on how to rid your home from unwanted pests, call the Pest Rangers today at 570-826-1114 or visit them online at thepestrangers.com. This episode is brought to you by Sweat Tent, the pioneers of the portable wood-burning sauna. Did you know that using the sauna 3 to 4 times per week could reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 50% and make you 60% less likely to experience Alzheimer's disease? That's why I've been a big fan of the sauna for years. But having to go to a crowded gym to do it isn't ideal. And all the at-home options are bulky and expensive. That's why I only use the Sweat Tent for my sauna needs. It's the most storable and affordable wood-burning sauna on the market. It not only takes minutes to set up, but it can reach 200 degrees Fahrenheit in 30 minutes or less. So whether you're enjoying it yourself in your backyard, with friends, or in need of a reliable sauna on the go, Sweat Tent is your best choice for the most portable, storable, and enjoyable outdoor sauna experience. All On The Stacks listeners will receive $100 off when you use code OTS. Visit sweattent.com today to get $100 off your purchase with code OTS at checkout. Again, that's sweattent.com to get $100 off with code OTS. Sweat Tent, helping you fire up your home wellness routine.
First of all, I'm proud that I'm the one who started basketball here in MCF. And also I'm mentoring some kids to play basketball. And I thank Dad also, he has a vision for having a big house like this for us to play the indoor games like table tennis, basketball. And it's such an honor and I'm very happy because most of the kids who have talents in basketball will have a play to display their talent and also emerge to be great people in the future, maybe athletes or compete there outside. That's one thing that will make me happy, seeing them growing and playing basketball and having a permanent team where they can get their salary, they can be paid, and also they can mentor others.
Yes. Yeah. So how else, obviously sports, I noticed it was yesterday or the day before, but me, Eric, Josh, and Josh, we all played out on the field, right on the other side of the wall here.
Yeah.
We were all out there playing soccer with the kids, and we had a blast. So, you know, how does all the sports, I noticed, you know, there's a lot of interest in sports here from the kids that are here. So how much does sports play a role here at MCF?
Let me take you back when Dad was rescuing us. Then you know, when you are in the street, most of the thing that we usually do is to play football or to play games, because you feel much happier playing and also you forget most of the problem that you have. So sport has played a key role in most of the kids here in MCF, mostly when they are rescued. Because when you are rescued, you are being introduced to these games. So there, most of our kids do identify their talents, because you find most of us in the street playing football. So when you rescue someone and then you bring him to a school like this, a home like this, like MCF, the first thing, what he was doing there as a talent, you continue motivating him. So you'll find that most of these kids, they want to be like Cristiano, they want to be like Messi, they want to be like James, playing those old games. So the first thing that Dad usually do is to identify the talent. Apart from education, first of all, you identify what does this kid have? What makes him happy? What does he do on his free time? So you'll find that most of us do these sports. They are outside in the street. And when we come here and then we get opportunity like this, we usually improve what we can do and do it best. So you'll find that most of our kids, the younger kids, you'll find the small kids, they are being introduced to football earlier. So they grow up knowing that, no, I can do this and then earn a living from this. And I can do this football, I can play the football and also help someone there outside and also help my family. So most of us have really, we have really done our best in these sports. And currently we also have the karate team. I think you've also heard about the karate team, MCF karate team.
Yeah,
we are the Eastern and Central African champions. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I did karate myself. I'm actually a black belt myself in karate.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm very familiar. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think you can visit them one time when they are training.
Yeah.
See, yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at what age were you when you first started playing soccer in the streets?
In the street, I say 10 years. When I was 10 years, I was playing football in the slums, Kibera slums, because most of the time you'll find that my mom is not there and also we are not able to go to school. So we can just make our own football using the polythene bags and then start playing. And that's where I gained the interest. We used to play with our neighbors. When most of the kids have gone to school, there are some who their parents could not afford a school fee. So usually remain behind and also play until evening. Yeah. So that time you go without lunch, you even forget lunch because you don't have anything to eat. So you just play, you play, you play, and then evening you go home, and then maybe if your mom have come with something, then you can eat from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you probably never had a real soccer ball.
No.
In the street, right? So tell me again, what was it that you used? How did you make a ball?
You make a ball using the mattress pieces, and then you tie them you cover it with polythene bag, and then you use rope to tie it, and then it becomes something like a ball.
Wow.
So you start playing that one.
So you had
because
to make,
we couldn't afford the original ball, football,
right,
or soccer ball. We usually made it for ourselves, and then we play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you know during your childhood, from what I understand, you had a few siblings, talk to me about growing up, you know, with your family in the slum, and explain to you a little bit, you know, about the slum, like what, you know, what is it, what was the atmosphere like?
If I can take you back, I'm a person who grew up with only my mom. My dad died when I was 1 week old, and because of the family wrangles of the piece of the land that we have, dispute in our with our relatives. My mom left the up country to go and look a work, look something to do so that he can cater for our needs. So the only place that he could land on was in Kibera because she was not well educated and she couldn't afford or get a good job that pays well. So he landed in Kibera. He used to work for the rich people because in Kibera, it's surrounded by the rich people. Now the poor people in Kibera, they work for these rich people and they are being given something small to cater for their needs. So that's what my mom used to do. And he also supplemented that with selling the liquor. We call it as local brew in Kibera. And life was very difficult because the only money that he could get was only to cater for maybe food. We couldn't afford to pay so much amount of rent and also to take us to school. That couldn't manage all that. He could only buy food for us and also some clothing, not those good clothings, second-hand clothings. So life was very difficult because if you think being 10 years and then you are staying outside for almost from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. until these people who are taking brew in the house finish and they leave, it was very difficult. And also that's how I was by then. That's my life in Kibera. And I also had my friends, those friends of mine who we used to play with them football, the soccer. Most of us used to sell steal things from the neighbors. So you steal something like a metal and then you go and sell it as a scrap. And then you get something small to supplement the money that your mom is getting from selling the liquor and also doing the casual work around to the rich people. So it was very difficult. And somebody like me in my whole life, I've never been paid. My mom have never paid school fee for my education. I've went through orphanages together with my siblings. So sometimes you could find even, because Kibera is very congested, you'll find even most of the girls, like my sister, small or middle age, they are being raped. Or people are coming into your house, they steal everything because it's not a permanent house. It can be break from the other side and then they steal everything. Wow. And that's what our life used to go and steal things. We sell and then we get money for the family. Or for example, if they have these taps, because water is being sold through the channel and then the tap, we could open those channels and then sell the water and then take the money and then leave it running like that. Mm. And then we go home.
So as a young kid, you had to steal to survive.
Yeah, we had to steal to survive because we couldn't get even, sometimes my mom could not even get anything from the selling of the local brew. Or even from the casual work that she used to do. So the only thing I could, because I was the only boy in the family, I could try and also hustle and get something for the family at that young age.
Wow. Mm. So you know, as you were growing up as a kid and you know, living in, you know, in the slum, like, from what I understand, you joined a gang or maybe multiple gangs throughout your childhood?
Yeah, I joined, we had only one gang because it's Kibera is surrounded by different small villages. So you'll find that this gang is from the other village, this one is from the other village, this one is from another village. So we only had one gang whereby we could steal things and sell. Also, sometimes we go to the shop and try and lie and get something there from there and then you bring it home.
So what was that gang life like? Like you know? Like, was there like an initiation into the gang? Like you know, in the for example, in the United States, like the, you know, there's obviously gangs too, mm-hmm. and you know, there's an initiation process to be able to get into the gang, and then they follow certain rules, and you know, there's certain things you do. You live by the street code and things like that. Is it similar here?
It's not similar here because the gang that I was in, provided you are from the same village, you are the same gang.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, did you all operate like together to like work together to steal things, or were you kind of just on your own?
Mostly, if you want to go and steal something very big, that's when now you come as a groom.
But you need some extra partners.
Yeah. But if it's just these small things, you just go and steal, and then you come back and get the money. You sell it. Maybe you can go with one of your friends to take a look for you as you steal them, and then you come back and
you had your buddy as the lookout.
Give him something small. Yeah.
Yeah. what kind of things like were that you said it was like metal, like maybe metals that then, you know, like a welder would then use to be able to make maybe some things like you would see like the windows in here. Is it stuff like that?
Yeah. Mostly things that I used to sell to steal was metal. Maybe plastic things. Maybe sometimes we go and if you get someone has left his own clothes outside, you take them and then you go and sell.
Mm.
Yeah. We could also break into some of the shops and they'll steal the curtains, steal some of the shoes that are there, and then we sell them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on our drive here, so we flew into the airport at Nairobi, and on our drive in, you know, here to MCF, you know, we witnessed a lot of, mothers, females, and a lot of children. Children were either rolling barrels of water, or the mothers had, you know, were carrying big barrels, probably like, you know, very large amounts of water on their back. I mean, did you have to do that as well? Like, you know, tell me about like, how you had to get water as a child.
Mostly in Kibera, because we don't have any means to carry water to our places, we normally carry them using maybe you put it on your shoulder and you could fetch it from a far place, maybe around 1 kilometer, and then you bring it back home. And sometimes there could be no water, totally there's no water around Kibera. So we could also go as far as 5 kilometers to go and ask for the rich people to give us water. So it's mostly because a place like Kibera is highly densely populated. It has like a million of people there living there.
Wow.
And it's a small place. So there's competition.
For survival.
For survival, mostly for water and food also.
Wow.
If you get a little, you know how to use it. We could even go without bathing because you want to preserve that water to drink it tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah.
So you would have to, there'd be days and, you know, so 5 kilometers you'd have to walk. And that's one way,
yeah,
right? You'd walk 5 kilometers,
yeah,
one way,
yeah,
to get water.
Yes.
That from a little bit of the research that I've done may not even have been the cleanest water.
Yes.
And then you would take that water.
Yes.
And you would then walk another 5 kilometers back home.
Yes.
Would that basically be like the best part of a day for you?
It was very, very hectic for me. Someone in that small, that little age, carrying that big jerry can, 20 kg, and then for 5 kilometers, and then you bring it back home. It was very difficult for me. And we could only go for maybe once. You can't go for the second time because you are very tired. And the other thing, you could find us even drinking that dirty water because there's no totally water. Because when you go there to fetch that water 5 kilometers from your place, you'll find so many people there. So you'll queue the line for about 2 to 3 hours waiting to fetch only one jerrycan of water. So you can't go back because if you go back, you'll come back late in the night. So we could also go and fetch that dirty water and use it for cleaning, sometimes use it for cook. That was the life.
Wow. Mm. Wow, that's, you know, I think, you know, back home in America, we, you know, thank you for sharing all that. I think, as Americans, I think we often take for granted something as precious as water is. And
mm-hmm.
I think,
yeah,
you know, it gives me a lot of perspective, and I hope everyone that's listening and watching,
yeah,
can also gain some perspective and some appreciation for, yeah, you know, a resource like water.
Yes.
After hearing a story like that, I mean, you know, I just can't even imagine, you know, like it's, you know, literally you spend a whole day,
yes,
just back and forth just, yeah, to get water that
just to get water
may not even have been clean.
Yeah.
And would you get sick from it? Were there times that, you know, you or your family got sick from,
yeah,
from the water as well?
Most of us, at that time, we got sick, mostly because of cholera, because this water sometimes is not clean, and you don't have even money to buy the chemical to make it clean. Mm-hmm. You will go and get cholera. And also the treatment now, the part of the treatment now, you can't afford even the medicine to go to the hospital. You can't afford the money to go to the hospital.
If you got sick.
Yeah, if you got sick. And there are no free hospitals here in Kenya. You have to pay something to be treated. So Some of us, because of not drinking, if you find your sister sick because of drinking such a water, you go without drinking water. You're just there. You don't want to drink it because when you get sick, that's another expense. Your family has to incur another expense of going to treat you. So you just leave it.
Wow.
And then maybe if you get someone who is drinking clean water, maybe you borrow him and then say, please help me with this so that I can drink just one cup.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they like.
So where you lived, like your house, how big was it? Can you kind of explain like how your living quarters, like what was that like?
Our house is at that time it was not big. Even up today it's not big. It's just a small house where your mom lives, and then we didn't have even the beds. We could sleep down.
You slept on the floor?
Down on the floor.
Was it dirt like this?
Just like this. And then you will sweep it in the morning, and then tomorrow again you put that mattress down and then you sleep.
So you had a mattress at least?
Yeah, I had a mattress at least.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
it was leaking, and it was also, we had a small, something like a carpet, a small one, but a plastic one, just to cover the dirt from coming to our mattress.
And now how big was it? Like, was it multiple bedrooms? Did you have a kitchen? Did you have any other living spaces?
No.
Or was it just one big wide open room?
Just a small house, a small room with my mom's place of sleeping, us sleeping down. And then near the door, there's a kitchen. It's just a one room, but kitchen, a place where you can sit, and a place where you, when you want to sleep, you remove the seats now. We put on those plastic, and then we put the mattress down and then sleep there.
And you're just
it's
in
just
one,
a small room. Yeah.
Like one small square.
One square, yeah.
About how big was it?
I don't know the measurement, but it was very small.
But small enough that, you know, so it was you and you.
My two siblings,
yep.
My mom,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you were, I'll say, sleeping at night, did that take up most of the space in the house?
It took most of the space because when my mom want to come from a place where he's sleeping, we need to wake up so that he can pass. It's just a small place.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. So
very
I mean,
small place.
If I had to guess,
yeah.
You know, here after hearing that, I mean, I can't imagine that the house was probably any bigger than like about 10 feet by about 10 feet. Right, probably not much bigger than like, you know, just a little area like this. Does that sound about right?
Just a little area like this one.
Yeah.
Here, yeah. From where we are, from here to that end. Just a small space.
Yeah.
Space.
Because
we couldn't afford a big space because you have to pay money.
Mm.
And the rent was a problem to us. Even eating was a problem to us. So we couldn't even afford that big house. My mom couldn't afford that big house. Mm-hmm. We just needed a small space where we can sleep. Yeah, and the day continue.
How long did you live in a space like that?
I've lived in that space since I was young, up to when I was rescued here in MCF.
At what age were you rescued?
I was rescued when I was 13 years old.
13. How did that happen?
I used to, because I've told you, I in our school, all through my life I've been through orphanages. So the first orphanage that I went through back door. I lied because I wanted to get education like other kids. So I went there and lied that they needed orphans. I went there and lied and said, I don't have a mom together with my siblings. We are suffering. We need a place to sleep. And then they accepted us in. And then later on, they came and found that I had a mom when I was in grade 4 now. They chased me away. I went back to the slums.
So they threw you out?
They threw me out and then together with my siblings. And then we went again to the slum. And while I was in the slum, I found out that there's another school, orphanage, that is supporting those who are needy. So I went there. It was called Stara Rescue Center. Now in Stara Rescue Center, MCF, through Dad, used to supply that school with meals, like French beans, beans, and also maize. So I used to enjoy that so much because I could carry some to my mom back at home, and then now we could cut the cost of buying the food because I could carry the
because you got it
the
there,
one
that
I've been given, and
home.
Then I take it back home. And after finishing grade 8, I wanted now to just go and get a casual work and do and help my mom. And that's when I came to this one of the pioneers from this place known as John Maynard. So Dad used to send John Maynard to bring us the food. Mm. So when we finished grade 8, that's when John Maynard called us, and then he said, I have seen you guys have a lot of needs and I can help you. I was once a street children like you, and there's a place that I can take you and you can get best education. You can get new parents, you can get brothers and sisters, you can get a good place to sleep, you can be treated when you are sick. Then I was like, what is this place? Is this place heaven or where?
Pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a heaven to me because I've never gotten that, that opportunity of getting maybe someone who can cater for all your needs, give you food, take you to hospital when you are sick, and treat you just like his own child. Or maybe get an opportunity to call someone dad, because through all my life I've never called someone dad, and I grew up knowing that dads are very bad, they didn't care for their kids. So I didn't know even if my dad was dead. I just knew that dads, they don't care for their kids. So in 2009, he brought us this side, and really what he told us from the slum there was true. He met this person who was very loving, a person who wants to hear your story more. He wants to know which problem do you have, how can I help you do this. Someone who wants to mentor you and make you someone who is very great in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how I landed here in MCF.
So back when you started going to that orphanage, that you were able to get the food that was being brought from MCF to
yes.
that orphanage,
yes.
Did you know who Molly was at that time?
This episode is brought to you by Elevation Wellness, NEPA's premier wellness center located on Mundy Street in Wilkes-Barre. From pro athletes to busy parents, Elevation Wellness is leading the conversation when it comes to bettering your health through integrative medicine. Founded by NEPA native Louis Helmecki, Elevation Wellness offers physician-formulated and guided treatments that are administered by registered nurses. To learn more about how you can experience the benefits of IV vitamin therapy, multivitamin booster shots, non-invasive aesthetics, or peptide, NAD, red light, and compression therapy, visit elevation-wellness.com or follow them on Instagram at elevationwellnessNEPA. All On The Stacks listeners will receive 10% off their first purchase with code STACKS at checkout. Call 570-762-9400 or visit elevation-wellness.com to book your appointment today. Elevation Wellness, taking your health to new heights.
At that time, I didn't know about MCF. I didn't know even about Muli. I didn't know even about the person who was bringing the food. As we just went there, we could read for even like 5 hours and then you are being given food. So tomorrow you will wake up and go again there and then be given food, go back home. You don't know even who is bringing that food. We didn't even have that time to appreciate, thank you, I've gotten this one. Because I was seeing like, this is my right. I need to go there and get that, maybe stay in class for 1 hour. The rest of the hour I'm outside, maybe in the washroom, just standing there. And then at lunchtime I get food and then go back home. So I didn't know even the person who was bringing the food until John Maynard called us and told us that this food that I usually bring here is being sponsored by the person who I'm taking you guys to.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. So when did you meet Molly?
I met Molly when we arrived here in MCF, because most of the time when you come to MCF, Dad calls those people who are new in MCF and then tries and talk to them, and maybe you share your story and then he listens from you. Yeah.
What was your first interaction with Molly like?
I can say it's like there's a click of connection whereby I just saw someone who is ready to help me, because I shared my story and he was like, yeah, you guys are from slums and you'll be great tomorrow. We'll support you with everything that you need. And then I saw that this is God working in his own ways. And I was very happy because down the line, 10 years down the line, what he had told me, it's just what I'm seeing now working. Yeah, we are becoming great people.
Yeah, so how did that make you feel once you finally got here? How did you feel?
I felt like I've come to a new home and all my problems are solved. The problem of going without water, the problem of going without food, the problem of sleeping in a leaking house, and the problem of staying outside until midnight as people are people take their liquor in our house has been solved. And I saw that there's an opportunity. I can now become someone who is better than I was in the slum. And also I saw, he talked about also spiritual, and then I saw what I was doing there in the slums, some of the things that I was doing, and then I saw, I just need to change my life and be someone who is better, and also get involved to know more about Jesus, and yeah.
How big of a role has your faith played in all of this?
I think through knowing the word of God here in MCF, I've changed a lot. The things that I used to do, maybe to go and steal people's property, I've come to know that I need to work hard and get mine. I don't need to go and steal people's property. And also, there's something that has really touched me, helping those who are poor. So all my life, I usually give a lot. I help those who need help. I can be somewhere, maybe I cannot afford to raise one kid, but I can support with something small, just to see him grow, become someone who is better. The way I've become better, I've been helped by MCF. Now, I want to see even that person becoming someone who is better through that little that I can offer to him. Yeah.
So, what, you know, obviously besides like the food and the water and the shelter here, what other opportunities, you know, as a young kid and then from your time growing here into an adult, what other opportunities were you given, were you able to take advantage of?
Some of the opportunity apart from?
Apart from the food and the shelter, like let's maybe talk about the education and, yeah. and opportunities to go to, oh, okay. I'll say like higher education, the university.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some of the opportunities that I've gotten here, I told you, as I joined MCF, I went through this since 2009 to 2012. And by then I was even the head boy. I had changed and all my habits have changed. And I was also mentoring other kids. So I was selected to be one of the head boy the school captain.
When I was in 12th grade, right?
Yeah, grade 12. Yeah.
So what is that? Explain that a little bit.
So because of how I was working and I was relating with most of my brothers here in MCF, I was selected to be one of the captain, the head of all of the MCF captain in school, and to take care of my brothers, to make sure if there's any problem, I can forward it to dad, or I can forward it to those who are in authority, like the home coordinators and the manager. So by then I used to take also, while I was in grade 12, I used to take care of the kids. Ensure in the evening, everything, every person I've gotten is food, every person is in class, and everything is running smoothly. And in case there's any problem, I forward it and explain that these need to be solved, these one need to be adhered to, and also some of the things need to be rectified. Maybe if most of the students are not interested in it, I used to do that when I was in high school. And then after finishing, I decided, because I've been mentoring this kid, why can't I just remain and serve them for more 2 years and teach the little one. I used to teach agriculture and biology by them, and I taught for 2 years and also taking care of the kids.
Yeah, how many kids were you taking care of?
I was taking everyone, ensuring that they are safe, they have eaten the right time, they are in their devotions, and then they have slept.
Was it just the grade 12, or was it all of the?
I was taking all,
like
from the kindergarten up to grade 12
of this facility here.
This facility.
So from what I understand, there's anywhere from about 1,000 to 1,200 kids.
Yeah.
Here, so you were in charge of.
I was in charge as elder brother.
Yeah.
I was in charge of all of them.
That's impressive. Yeah. As a 12th grader?
At a 12th grade.
So what were you, 17, 18 years old?
Yeah, I was 18 years old by
wow.
then, yeah.
Yeah, how did that make you feel to be able to have, you know, to be able to take on a leadership role like that?
By that time, I identified that I can be someone who is a leader. There was leadership skill in me. So I just needed to display it so that it can be seen that this person can do this and this.
Mm.
So through that, even dad came to realize that, this person is a leader. He's also, he can control the kids, he can take care of the kids, and he can solve even the problems, the small problems, I can solve them without even going to dad and telling this, this, and this. And I can also ensure that the compound is very clean and the kids are also in their correct place where they're supposed to be.
Was there anyone that helped you become a better leader throughout, you know, as you were in school before you took on that leadership role? Like, did you have a mentor, like anyone that you worked with specifically that really kind of helped you become a better leader?
I think there are three people who I can say really helped me. One is there's a former ed boy known as James. He was here, he used to take care of us, and also I was looking up more. I want to be like this person. When I reach grade 12, I want to be like James because he takes care of us very well. Mm. And also, I can also say there was home coordinator known as Guayumba. Guayumba, he used to take care of us and in a such a manner that he could identify a problem and solve it without even involving other people or involving higher authority. He just solved it neutrally with the rest of the kids. So that one is another person. And another person who I can also say mentored me is Daddy Muli, how usually he's very organized, ensuring that everything runs properly and smoothly.
Yeah. I have to say, you know, since we've been here, today's our last day here, and we're going to be going on to a couple other sites down in Nakuru, working on some different projects. But mm-hmm. I have to say, from the short amount of time that me and my team have stayed here,
yes,
we are highly, highly, highly impressed. I yes. can't say that enough. Mm-hmm. With the, just touch on, you know, what you just said, the organization here,
yes,
like, you know, and how smoothly everything runs, the hospitality,
yes,
the kindness, mm-hmm. the caring. I mean, I've never met people that were happier and more cheerful,
yes,
more grateful,
yes,
than yourself and everyone here, literally everyone, from the kids to the staff to everyone. Like, everyone there, you could feel it here. Yeah. Like, you could feel the atmosphere here, mm-hmm. is something like I've never felt in my life before.
Yes.
And it's very, very impressive. So it makes me smile to see like all this great work that you guys are doing, and to, you know, to know that, you know, you as, you know, when you were 17, 18 years old, that you stepped into a leadership role like that, and, yeah, and you said, hey, like, I want to be like the people that helped raise me.
Yes.
I want to be that same person to the people that are coming up behind me.
Yes.
And there's something to be said about that. And that's really, really great. Yes. And so after high school, you went on to the university, which we had the pleasure yesterday.
Yes.
We went over to IATA,
yes,
and we saw the university. We got to see the new hospital that's currently,
yes,
being built there. So tell me about your experience at the university as a student, what your degree is, and yes, then, you know, kind of a little bit after college.
Yes. As I told you earlier, that I served for 2 years after finishing grade 12 because I didn't want to go to the slum, because I knew what was in the slum. Most of my friends there were killed. Those who we used to steal things with, those who we used to go and maybe break houses and steal property, most of them were killed by mob justice, and some were killed by the police. So I didn't want to go there because I was one of the gang from there. Mm.
Would they still know you if you went back?
Yeah, they could still know me.
Really?
Yeah. So
they would just identify you?
Yeah.
What would they do if they saw you there?
Maybe they, if they find me, maybe get talking to them, maybe they can confuse me, and then they take us, all of us, or they kill us, all of us.
Really?
Because I don't know what most of my friends used to do when I was not there. So when I go there, they'll still be my friends. I'll still speak to them. Maybe we can be friends, and then there's one person maybe who went and killed someone or stole some of the property. And then they find us together, they just take us, all of us, to the prison.
Wow.
So I didn't want to go there. I just told Dad I just want to remain and serve my brothers and sister, because my ways had changed. So I didn't want to go back to
that life,
the same life I used to live while I was in the slums. And then I served for 2 years, and then Dad called me, and then he told me, because you've been a good example to the rest of the kids and you've served very well, I'm going to continue supporting you for your higher education. So I was taken to one of the best universities, of which I'm very proud of, Kabarak University. I was taken there, and Dad paid everything. Putting in mind that when I joined MCF, my mom only came once, and then she never came back again.
And why is that?
He just came to see where I was, and then he went. So she has never come back again. So she didn't even pay anything. Dad has been paying everything since I joined MCF. My mom, I've never paid any cent. I can say any cent. Or may it be clothes, food, shelter, medical bill, all who cares for them is Daddy Muli, of which I'm very proud of. And Dad took me to the university. As I told you, I went to Kabarak University and I took a course, Bachelor in Commerce, major finance. So I did finance while I was in university. That's what that was something I really longed to do. So I just did what was best for me.
So you were interested in the business and the finance?
Yeah, I was very interested in doing the business course and being good with numbers.
Yeah. I told you before we started, I'm not good with numbers.
Most of the people are not good with numbers.
Yeah.
Even my mom says, no, anything to do with numbers? No.
Right, yeah.
Even my sister, no.
Takes a very special person.
Yeah.
Right? So you got your degree.
Yes.
And then what did you do after that?
After I finished my degree, I came back again because this is where I call home. And I came back to tell Dad I've gotten this degree and there's something new I've learned from the university which I can share with the kids. So I came back to teach economics in high school. And then while I was serving, he said, that's not enough. You need to go back to school and do another master's. I want you to go and do even PhD.
Molly, yeah, Daddy Molly asked you to?
That's what he said. You will do PhD. And then I was like, I'm going back to school again to do master's. And then let me take the opportunity and go back.
Right.
So I went back to and registered master's. So I did master's in science finance, the same line. And currently I'm working on my thesis. And I finished my classwork the other time in 2021 and working on my thesis. Yeah. So but currently I'm working... because you don't need to go back to school while you are working on your thesis. You just need one day maybe to go and defend and then you are back. So currently I'm working in the accounts department under finance.
Okay. So do you work here at this facility or are you working is your job over at YADA?
I usually work here in MCF Ndalani in the accounts department.
Okay.
Yes.
What's a typical day like for you?
It's always a busy day. Yeah, the moment you've entered that office, you'll just leave in the evening because there's a lot to be done and there's a lot to learn from there. And people like us, we normally want to learn new things. We want to be taught. We want to be shown how do you do the how you do this. Because tomorrow, maybe those who are there in the office, they won't be there.
Mm.
They'll bring another person, maybe your brother from MCF. Now you'll have to teach him. So you have to learn a lot. So that's what I'm doing there in the office.
Yes. Yeah, so it's always learning.
It's always learning. You learn new things each and every day.
Yeah.
And if you learn and then you try and do it. But most of the kids here, anytime you are taught something, you usually remember it. That's how I am. When I'm taught something right now, I'll remember it tomorrow.
You don't forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll remember it by maybe showing another person. So I can go to my friend and they say, this one, we usually do it like this. So I won't forget it very easy.
Mm.
And that's how I was even in university. In university, they could teach us in class. I was there very attentive. Most of my classmates were not attentive or they have not come to school. So tomorrow I'm the one who is going to teach them. So we'll go to the library and then I teach them. I learn more from there.
You're teaching,
by teaching
yeah,
them.
So you're, yeah. You're learning more by teaching some of the other students who may not have been there.
Yes, and that's how I got first class from university.
Mm.
I got first class honors in my degree, Bachelor in Commerce, Major Finance. I got first class.
Wow.
First class came from teaching others. Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because in MCF we've been taught you have to share something that you have. If you have knowledge, share with someone who doesn't know. Don't keep it for yourself. The moment you've kept something for you only, you usually forget. But when you teach someone something that you've been taught or something that you've learned, you get it more and more and more.
I think that's a great mindset to have. And I think that can be applied in in everything in life,
yes.
right? Not in, you know, maybe not just schooling, but like literally anything. And
yes.
I think it really gives a lot more perspective when you sit here and you think about that. It's
yes.
instead of holding in all the knowledge, I also believe this the same that you know, I like to share as much knowledge as I can mm-hmm. to as many people as I can.
Yes.
And similar to this the podcast that we're doing right now, being able to take, you know, this knowledge, your knowledge, my yes. knowledge, and we're able to share it with
yeah.
with the rest of the world, whoever's listening and watching, to be able to constantly learn from my experiences, from your experiences, and
yes.
and constantly give back. And I think that's been one of the things that I've experienced here from our short time here is everyone here is so kind and giving, and yes. everyone is giving back. And I've also noticed that everybody is very sharing. You know, yeah. again, we use the word share.
Yes.
Everyone here shares a lot.
Yes.
Everyone shares everything, right? And yeah. I just, you know, it's, again, for me, from coming from America, unfortunately, we don't have, there's not a lot of people that have and share this same mentality. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's really nice to be able to be in a place like this
yeah.
and experience that. Like I said, like, no matter where I walked on this facility, where I turned, there was somebody there saying hello
yeah.
asking if they could help us with anything. Do yeah. you need anything?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just constantly, the hospitality, like, it's incredible.
Yeah.
It really, really is incredible.
Mm.
So what are there any other lessons maybe that you have learned, whether it was from teachers, mentors, Moli, younger students, older students? What other lessons that maybe you learned that kind of really stuck with you throughout your time here?
One of the best lessons that I've learned here in MCF is love. I can say MCF have taught me love through our dad and mom. We've learned a lot of love, because you can find most of us are from different tribes. I told you here in MCF we have like 52 tribes.
Yeah.
Different. We speak different languages. When you are there outside, there's always tribe discrimination. For example, I come from the Luo land. I'll find if I go to maybe the Maasai or I go to the Kikuyu land, I'll be discriminated there. But here in MCF, I've never seen discrimination. Dad is always there to listen to you. Whether you come from Luo, whether you come from Kikuyu, whether you come from the Maasai side, Dad will listen to you. He will call you. He will hug you. He will greet you. He'll say good words to you. He'll encourage you like his own biological child. And that's something that I want to go there outside and also embrace, because I want to teach people about love, how you can love your neighbor, how you can love that small kid despite of him coming from the other tribe, how you can share something that is going to benefit that child. And also the other thing I've learned is serving others. I've learned Dad has served. He has given us all everything. So when we go back there to the community, he'll be there to serve the community. We'll help them. We'll help those small kids who are there. Because we are the mentors today, tomorrow, we are the one who is going to raise those kids from the slums. It's not Daddy Muli who is going to raise those kids from slums. He has given us a platform to go and raise those kids. So tomorrow I'm going back to my community. I'm going to lift those lives which are there in the slums. I'm going to teach them, you are not supposed to do this. You're not supposed to steal this. You're not supposed to take this alcohol. You're supposed to do this and this. And I'm going to teach them the ways that I've learned here in MCF. Yeah.
That's great. Mm. Yeah, like I said, we've really enjoyed our experience here, and yes. It's a pleasure meeting you and
yes.
and learning. You know, I got a little bit of your story. I'm glad we ran into each other yesterday. We briefly met yesterday, and I'm glad we were able to fit this in right before we head out on our next leg of our trip here.
Yes.
So what does the future look like for you here at MCF? Like, what's next for you?
What's next for me after? Currently, I'm serving in MCF for some time. I just want to go back and change the life of my community. Yeah, that's what I'm looking to. Maybe mentor or raise two kids and give them the same life I was given. Go there and work with them, try to solve some of the problems that I experienced when I was young in the community, which are still there, and try to see how I can also mentor the youth who are there to be great people just the way as I am. Yeah.
Is there, before we end, is there any message that maybe you'd like to leave with with our listeners and viewers about you know, your way of life and everything here at MCF. Is there anything you'd like to add?
One thing I can say, everything is possible. Through my life, I had no hope, but currently I have hope. And if there's that opportunity whereby you can help one kid and just make him be a better person in the society, please try and do that. Because if dad could have said, no, I don't want to take those people from the slum, where could we have been? But now he's proud because he took in some of the people from the slums who are now becoming better people, who are now able to go back to the community and help their community, and talk much about MCF, and talk much about how MCF have transformed their life. So don't give up on that child. Don't give up on that bad person. Those are the great people in the society. Be a person who can mentor them. Be a person who can try and talk to them and solve what some of the problems they are going through. Listen to them and make them greater people in the society. Yeah, that's the message that I can leave them. That even if it's your own biological child, don't give up on him. Just continue mentoring him. Don't continue counseling him. Just continue listening to him, and he'll become a greater person. And above all, we put God first and pray for him. Because even if you try, even if you do it without God, I think it won't work. Just try and pray for him. Take your time. Even if you'll not pray with him there, take your time and pray. God, remember my son. Remember this and this. Remember this person. Make him a greater person. And really, what you prayed for will be answered. Yeah.
I love it. That's great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you again for taking the time to sit down with me.
Thank you so much.
Rio Juma, yes. On the stacks here at MCF in Kenya. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much.
If you want to see more On the Stacks content, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/onthestackspodcast or search the hashtag On the Stacks on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.